You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Like my drunk Ray, right? You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Say something, Ray.
I didn't say anything.
You ain't gonna say nothing?
When you asked me to, when you introduced me, yes.
I'm Wally. Here with Ray, my boy Will T. We gotta start real fast because it's a special show. We have a special guest. But before we do that, I'm gonna give
y'all let's get into our tradition pregame.
We will talk with the WBC featherweight champion, DMV's own Gary Russell Jr. at 7:45. The NBA Finals. We'll discuss the NBA Finals at 7:55. Bryce Harper is rumored to be interested in joining the Chicago Cubs. At 8:05, the Washington Wizards working out Frank Mason. And it's like the NBA pre-draft, right?
Yeah, pre-draft.
All right. And at 8:15, we'll discuss the NBA thinking about expanding their age limit for the NBA draft. But first, we have WBC featherweight champion Gary Russell Jr., 28-1, 17 KOs, DMV's own, fought in the MGM. Gary, how you doing today, man?
Man, I'm doing wonderful, man. Had a long day yesterday. Yesterday was my birthday, so spending time with the family and everything else. Getting through it. I'm actually about to be on my way to the gym in a second.
Okay, that's good. Gary, this is Will from the Urban Sports Scene. One question for you. Are you a sports fan? Do you follow local sports?
Say it again?
Do you follow local sports teams in the area?
Honestly, I don't, man. I really, honestly, my family don't watch television at all. If we do watch television, it's probably, you know, a kid's show or something like that. But in most cases, I don't watch television.
Oh, okay, because I was going to ask you. Last week, you know, one of D.C.'s premier sports stars, Bryce Harper, he got into a fight against the San Francisco 49ers, the San Francisco Giants, and he threw a straight right, and I was going to ask you to evaluate that if you had saw it, and possibly could you give him some help?
I wish I would have seen that one.
It's all good, man. But let me ask, you said yesterday was your birthday, you celebrated your birthday, and we know that 2 weeks ago at the MGM, you came off a victory. Let me ask you, what's the first thing? I know because you train so hard, and you mentioned that you're about to head back to the gym after a victory. What's the first indulgence that you get? What's the first thing you indulge in since you have to? I don't know if your diet restricts you during training camp, but what's the first thing you indulge?
I always be fiending for this Rita's ice cream.
Ice cream?
Rita's ice cream.
Rita's ice cream? Oh, like the one in Forestville. There's a Rita's in Forestville. Yeah.
Italian icy.
Okay.
You know, I'm somewhat addicted to it. I'm upset that it's seasonal. So I actually started doing some homework because I'm thinking about buying a franchise of Rita's ice cream and putting it somewhere where that particular market wouldn't be seasonal. It'd be somewhere year round. So
that's a smart move, man. I know that you're still at the apex in your career, and I've read in some interviews that you stated that at 30 you're thinking of retiring. Is that true? Hello?
Did we lose him?
Did we lose him?
Gary?
Gary, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yeah, we hear you now.
I'm sorry. Could you say that? Repeat yourself one more time.
No, I said that's great that you're still at because you're in the apex of your career. You're thinking about your life after boxing. I read on a boxing scene a year ago that you stated that by the age of 30 you were thinking of retiring. Is that still true?
Yeah, that's about right.
That's right. Maybe. Oh man.
Maybe 31 top.
31 tops. They say most boxers, they really reach their prime around 30, 31. That's when they start their, you know, physically they reach their peak, and then mentally they seen enough in the ring, because I know you've had an extensive amateur career.
Right. You know, I think people tend to feel or realize the sacrificing in which that fighters have to do. You know, the hard work, the time away from the family, your children, your loved ones, your wife, and et cetera. I've been fortunate that my father, is my coach. My younger brothers are my stablemates when it comes to fighting, so I spent a lot of time with my father and my brothers. You know, we tend to get away from the possibility to be able to spend as much time as we want with, you know, just the wife and the kids, the missus and et cetera. You know, so we're definitely grinding for a purpose and making the necessary sacrifices for the purpose, but I feel as though we're coming up to that road where we're ready to reap the benefits of everything you've been putting down so far.
Yeah, much respect for that. You stated that you're actually headed to the gym. Are you headed to the gym? Do you actively stay in the gym even in between fights? I know that some fighters, when you know, if they don't have a fight on the horizon, they kind of rest and they allow their bodies to recuperate. Are you one of the boxers that stays in the gym training 365?
Yeah, I'm definitely one of the ones that's always in the gym.
Okay.
I might not be training as if I'm getting ready for a fight, you know, et cetera. I mean, like I say, my last couple fights, I've had over a year layoff. Why is it that you see no ring rust? Because we're in the gym all the time. It's never really a thing of ring rust. You know, we get the ring rust out in the gym. We stay in shape. We stay sharp. I'm not training as if I'm getting ready for an actual fight, but it's like a car. You got to keep it in constant motion. You got to start it every once in a while.
Oh, okay. After, maybe this is a sore spot or not, but I'm going to ask you, after the Lomachenko fight, your next three fights, your last three fights, your three fights after that one, it's, to me, just, you know, I'm a fan of yours. I've observed something. It seems like when you come out in the first round, you're far more aggressive opposed to being what some people would categorize you as a counterpuncher. Has that been a strategic shift in your strategy going after the Lomachenko match?
Do you remember any of my fights before the Lomachenko fight?
Yeah, I remembered a lot of your fights.
Do you think that I was aggressive in my approach?
Yeah, I thought No, the only reason I asked that is because on during the telecast of Showtime, they mentioned that they thought that you came out far more aggressive after the first few rounds after the Lomachenko fight. That's the only reason I'm asking. I've seen your fight.
A lot of the stuff that people talk about and say, they really don't know what they're talking about. They're talking just to hear themselves talk or to see something physically on paper that might sound good when it's being said. But nothing has changed. It's the same individual that you've seen before the Lomachenko fight.
No,
I'm the same individual that was in the Lomachenko fight. I'm going to give you somewhat of an analogy. You know, you have a race car, and your race car is running perfectly fine. The engine is good. It's shifting gears properly. And you have to compete. The day before the race, someone comes and pours all of the oil out of the car. The car is still going to drive, but it's not going to have the same level of performance. It's not, the gears are going to be getting stuck. It's not going to shift the way it's supposed to. It's not going to have the same level of performance. Pull the car back around, fill the oil back up, cut it on, and it's going to run perfectly fine. The engine and everything is still intact. That's the scenario in which that happened in the Lomachenko fight. He got an early Christmas gift, and he needs to hold on to it as tight as he possibly can. Because before the end of my career is over with, he's going to have to see me twice.
That's what I want to hear. That's what I was looking forward to. And I'm definitely looking forward to that.
So,
I definitely think you're a superior fighter than Vasily Lomachenko.
So, Gary's question, I have a question. This is Wally. Do you want Lomachenko next? Would that be the fight you want next?
As a businessman, you got to learn to be strategic.
Okay.
That's not a fight that I would want next. Now, that's the more appealing fight. Uh-huh. That's the fight that I want more than any other fight.
Okay.
As of now. That's the only fight that I look at. Everyone else is placeholders. They're just in the way to get, in my way of getting to what it is that I ultimately want. As far as him moving up in weight, I really don't care about the weight cost. You know, let's really be realistic about this situation. Mm-hmm. The only reason why Lomachenko's name is even a name, I can't take away from what he accomplished in the amateurs by him becoming an Olympian and gold medalist, etc. But no one knew who Vasily Lomachenko was once he turned professional until he fought Mr. Gary Russell Jr.
True.
He lost the
talk that talk.
True.
He lost to Cerrito, a straightforward fighter that brings nothing to this table but conditioning, no real skill set. This is who he lost to. No one knew who Lomachenko was until he fought Gary Russell Jr. He fought Nicholas Walters, who's realistically a strong C-class fighter that's just been hyped up to be something that he really, really isn't. Strategically, I would love to compete against any of the other world champions in our weight division. What's the guy? Abner Mars, Leo Santa Cruz, Lee Selsby, and whatever the outcome is of Santa Cruz and Frank Ben again, you can put Frank Ben in that mix as well. I would love to collect all these titles. He said, I don't feel that any of these guys have the skill set or the ability to do anything with me. Lomachenko will be the fight that I would want at the end of my career. I want to end my career with him.
Ooh, I like that.
I want to end my career with him.
That sounds great.
He had to see me twice, though. We got to fight twice.
My man.
Diehard boxing fans, we would love to see that fight. See the rematch. Well, you mentioned one thing that piqued my interest. You mentioned the business of boxing. You're represented by Al Haymon, correct?
Yeah, well, Al Haymon, we have a great working relationship. I'm not really tied in the lockdown with anyone. No. I'm not shackled or bound by anything.
Yeah, no, I only mentioned it because Al Haymon, personally to me, he's one of my heroes because of what he does for his fighters. He puts the fighters he advises or he manages, he puts them in the best position from a business and a strategic standpoint, whereas you see a lot of other managers and promoters, they often toll around and they waste a lot of the boxers' prime career years, or they put them in situations where it isn't beneficial for them in the long run to maximize their earning potential. So that's the only reason I brought up the business of boxing, because I know he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He doesn't take pictures. He doesn't even want to be seen ringside during your fights. But I just, me personally, the guy's one of my heroes. I look up to what he's done to maximize the careers of all the boxers who he advises or manages.
Yeah. You know, he's one of the great ones based upon the fact that he understands the order in which things go. In most cases with these managers and promoters, you know, it's a real, the politics really, really, really plays a big part in all sports. Mm-hmm. You know, and knowledge is really power. The more educated that you are on the concept of business, of course, helps out. Al is one of the people, or managers or promoters, whatever category you want to put them in, that understands that they or he ultimately works for the fighter. It's not the other way around. Nothing goes on without the fighter. And in most cases, you have these managers and promoters that's very, very sneaky and very, very slick. You know, you have these fighters that's competing, putting their lives on the line. Every time they step in the ring, you just had this guy who just recently just woke up out of a coma. You know, was he properly compensated for the stuff that he put himself in? Was he properly compensated for the fight that he competed in that put him in the state in which that he's in? You know, so you just got to make sure that we're properly compensated for the things in which that we do. I think Al Heyman is one of the best people in the business that understands that concept. That's one of the reasons why me and Al continue to have a great working relationship with one another.
That's what's up.
Touche.
Hey, Gary, we appreciate you for being on, honestly. We really do. We know that you have a busy schedule. You know, you got to train. Is there anything else you want to add?
Man, not at all, man. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm glad that you enjoyed the performance, you know, that I wrote. Hopefully you guys will see me soon. But please, please, please understand the business and the politics behind it. The managers and these promoters who invested time, energy, and money into these fighters, it might not be a smart business investment for some of these other world champions to get in the ring with Mr. Gary Russell Jr.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully, before your next fight or shortly after, we'll be able to get you on and talk about the performance, if that's okay with you.
Sound like a woman.
All right, man. Thanks, man. I just want to tell you I'm a huge fan of your work. I appreciate what you're doing, being a positive role model in the DMV, and just keep ascending to the top of the ladder, man.
All right. Thank you, man.
All right.
All right, man. That was Gary Russell Jr. Again, WBC featherweight champion. Has a lot to say. I love that he talked about the business. I love that he talked about the business.
Yeah, that's the part that I like to just, I'm a fan of boxing, but I also like to learn more about the business. I'm not in a position to be able to manage or anyone like that, but I just love because I work in business. I love to learn the aspect, the economics of boxing, and also the promotion and all the other facets of it.
I love what he said. I love what he said that he wants to see Lomachenko before he ends his career off.
Absolutely,
that's the fight he wants. Bad.
Absolutely, I'm happy to hear that he's being strategic with his money. Now, you know, there are a lot of people. We've heard the tales of athletes. I'm not going to just generalize boxer, but athletes in general, while they're in the midst of this run during their career, they don't take the time to learn the business and also set themselves up for life after boxing or life after their career. So it's great to hear that, you know, he's starting to look into those things and he's spending time with his family and he celebrated his birthday yesterday. I don't even think we said happy related birthday to him, did we?
I thought we did.
And if we didn't, hopefully maybe you'll listen, you'll hear this. Happy related birthday.
Yeah, I thought we did, though. I thought we did. I mean, did we, Ray?
No.
No.
All right, man. Anyway, we got to go to break anyway. When we get back from break, we'll talk about the NBA Finals. You listen to Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
sorry. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. We're back. I'm Wally, Will T, Ray Jeezy. Interesting interview. But we got to talk about the NBA Finals, man. Kevin Durant, another guy, he's rapping the DMV. He's having a phenomenal, phenomenal finals within the first two games. I think averaging over 30 points. Seemingly outplaying LeBron James. What are your thoughts so far in these first two games in the series?
Series over.
Series over?
That series over. Two words. That's all.
Series over.
Series over.
Why?
At most, this thing goes five. Uh-huh. But I would even be surprised if Cleveland won one game. Just because you clearly see, because as what Shaq refers to them as the others. You know, he's not the star player, the all-star uh-huh. star player, but the others like the Deron Williams, the Derek Williams, the Tristan Thompson.
Don't say Derek Williams. I'm playing now.
No, I said Deron.
Oh, they said Derek. Deron. Yeah. Oh, Deron's another.
Deron Williams. Yeah, Kyle Korver. Yeah. Those guys have brought nothing to it. Tristan, I'm particularly shocked at Tristan Thompson. He's brought, you know, the one thing that he does bring that we've seen him bring through the regular season is effort, mm-hmm. high energy on the offensive glass, rotating over on defense to pick up those backline assignments and provide some rim protection. Uh-huh. He's brought none of that. It's like he's in a daze. I don't know if he's preoccupied, or we know that this isn't, you know, the spotlight isn't too big for him because he was in this position. He's been in this position the last 2 years in a row. No, the past 3 years. This year will be the third year. But J.R. Smith clearly isn't playing his game.
Yeah, it's, you know, in basketball and the playoffs, this is the only thing I will say is the postseason. I mean, when you go home or away, right? They're going home.
Yeah, they're going home.
So people are like, so you're talking about Tristan Thompson. He's the energy guy, right?
Right.
So you feed off the energy when you go home, right? So I expect him. I expect him to play better because of energy. Because I'm not worried about skill. Energy. He's gonna bring more energy because he's gonna feed off the home crowd. I think he's gonna be that type of player. We're looking at we're referring to J.R. Smith. You never know what you're going to get with J.R. Smith. So I'm not going to tell you that J.R. Smith's going to play better when he gets home, all right? You assume that he would, but I'm not going to guarantee it. To me, like, in this situation, the issue I had within the first two games, and yes, I think Golden State's better. Like, I think that we've seen that they're better. But I also think that Tyronn Lue, a coach, has helped out the situation within sub patterns and whatnot. I just think he has done a bad job. I don't get why. I know he must like Richard Jefferson. I don't get the extended time that Richard Jefferson gets.
Yes, that's one thing that's confusing to me. Maybe he knows more about he knows more about his team than I do.
Yeah.
But Richard Jefferson isn't as fleet as foot and as athletic as he was during the early part of his career.
Yeah.
And when you're playing against a team that likes to play small and is athletic, like the Golden State Warriors, I would think a guy like possibly Derek Williams could give you a jolt of energy. You know, he can stretch the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He can guard threes, fours, and in some occasions a five, depending if they, you know, if they were to go with a Draymond Green at the five. So I think he would be he could potentially be a better matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Golden State Warriors, but we'll see when Game 3 happens Wednesday in Cleveland.
Would you all agree that the Cavaliers have had a lot of open looks in the first two games?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Now, would you assume, as you said earlier, you used the word assumption, I like that, would you assume that at home these role players, or the quote-unquote others, will make these open shots?
Particular players,
maybe Shumpert, even Shumpert at home, just from the naked eye, or just from observation, is a better shooter at home.
Yeah, I could.
In the playoffs. But a couple points I want to make is, one, obviously Kevin Durant is the biggest difference maker
easily
thus far. Uh-huh. But Game 3 will determine how big of a difference maker he is going forward, because, again, they got to do this on the road. It's going to be a bigger challenge. Secondly, I'm wondering I wonder what has happened to the Cavaliers' defense in comparison to a year ago. Because I think last season the Cavaliers were a better defensive team. And then lastly, have the Cavaliers been challenged enough? Is this an Eastern Conference issue at large? Because I think they come into the finals not having been tested.
I don't know.
That's a problem.
The last point. I don't think it's fair for us to say that the Cavaliers haven't been tested. This is a team that was what 12-1 headed into the finals.
Yes.
You can also say the Golden Warriors State hasn't been tested because they're 12-0 heading into the finals.
But if you look at the combined record of the teams that Golden State had to face going into the finals, it's a big difference.
But you're thinking of Portland without their big man, the who helped them get to the postseason. He didn't play. You look at Utah. You can say Utah, but then George Hill was out for most of it. But George Hill is important to Utah Jazz. I'm not saying that he's the star, but he's important to Utah Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
He helped them get that record. Then we're talking about Kawhi Leonard going down to San Antonio. They're not seeing the same team that we saw in the regular season within those teams they play. They're seeing different teams. They're not the same. Like, the Portland team was vastly better with their big. They didn't have their big to the last game of the series. So Golden State to me hasn't been tested either. They're just a better team. They're a better team. But I don't think they've been tested. They've just been dominant.
Okay, so I'll pose this question to you then. If the same Spurs team plays this same Cleveland team, do you think they notch a win in a series? Without Kawhi Leonard, the same Spurs team that faced Golden, would they have notched a win against Cleveland?
Notch a win?
Yes, in a 7-game series.
I mean, yes.
Yes. Indiana. Yes.
That's my point. But they played better teams. Can we not acknowledge that?
No, because at the end of the day, or for instance, to me, the Boston Celtics are a better team than the Pacers, but the Pacers, to me, gave the Cavs more go.
They
were competitive for most of that series. I'm just saying, like, the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sorry.
Most of the series. So, but
to they me, blew a big lead one
yes, game. Yes, so to me, but Boston's a better team. They're a better team than the Pacers. So I don't like the Cleveland Cavs are showing throughout the whole season anyway that they play down to their competition. It's not that whatever, they just play down to their competition.
Right, and I don't know if you can always compare regular season to.
Yeah, but
I do think it helps to be more battle tested. Now Golden State, like you said, they're just a better team. So that's why Golden State may make it look a little bit easier.
Yeah, I just don't think I don't think it was tested, but I just think they're a better team playing. Like, they're being tested. First, I guess you want to look at it. They're supposed to be tested now. They're just dominating. They're dominating the Cavs. This is the toughest team they played in the postseason. This Cavs team is the toughest.
Again, I think Game 3 will be a big indication of how the series is going to go. Mm-hmm. Even if the Cavaliers win, if they win a close game at home, that Golden State is clearly that much of a superior team. But I feel like the Eastern Conference is an issue. And the Cavaliers, and over the past several years, they have not had any difficult series leading up to the finals over the past three seasons.
I don't know. Like, to me, the Eastern Conference isn't as bad as what people make it out to be compared to the West. The West wasn't that great this year.
The West was top heavy.
Top heavy. Right. But you look at the bottom. Like, they were top heavy. I agree. But the bottom of the West wasn't that good, though. The bottom.
I don't think George Hill is enough of an argument for me to say that Utah is still not a tough team. Utah is a tough team. That's how Utah
advanced. Yeah, Utah is a tough team.
Yeah, Utah, or without George Hill. George Hill is his first season with
Mac them. Mac was your starting point guard. I like Mac, but for a lot of teams, he doesn't get any burn. Snyder trusts George Hill. He loves George Hill.
Regardless, they wouldn't outscore Golden State. We can agree on that.
Who, Utah?
Yes.
It's a bad matchup. They're not a scoring team.
Exactly.
Golden State is a scoring team.
So I don't know if that's a valid argument. My thing is, if you put Cleveland against Portland, Utah, and San Antonio, I think they have a much tougher time.
I think they still
get to the finals, but I don't think it's a cakewalk.
I think Cleveland easily beats Portland without the big. I think they easily beat. No, I'm serious.
I would agree with that.
They easily beat Utah because Utah isn't good enough to stop Cleveland. No, not with that team. No,
I'm not saying. Not have been as easy.
And then did Gobert play? Was he back in that series for all the games?
Gobert, yes, he was.
That's right. So he was back in the fall for all the games in the series. But Utah wasn't scaring anybody.
Will T, I'm looking at you. That's your mob right there.
What, Utah? No, I thought Utah or the Clippers could challenge the Golden State Warriors.
I like their team. I think they're a couple players away, but that's another argument. But
yeah, that's another conversation.
My whole thing is if we go from facing this to that, they go from the Toronto Raptors and a banged up Boston Celtics team.
Toronto was banged up also. Toronto didn't have Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, they were.
Thank you. So you
but
go
I don't for, respect them either.
Even if Toronto was fully healthy, that they're not a match for the Cavaliers. I'm sorry.
Toronto?
Yes.
They're already scared.
But that's my point. So you go from facing that to Golden State, it's like, whoa. Maybe there's a Tyron Lewis. I just
It's Boston. They went from Boston to Golden State. I'm not even counting Toronto. Toronto's irrelevant.
That's my point.
I agree. No,
you're making my point. No, no, no.
I'll make your point for this one. I make your point for this one. You didn't make a good point for the West. But
how?
You didn't. I said so.
And the thing is, we could go back to old shows, and he shows Utah so much love too. All of a sudden, we can go back and listen.
I love George Hill. George Hill is one of the best players of all time.
My gosh, get the heck out!
One of the best point guards.
Oh, we talking about George Hill.
We are. We're talking about George Hill.
Going back to the Trey Burke arguments, you've been like in Utah for a couple years.
I love Trey.
You're not
Trey
as vocal.
Burke.
Not
yeah,
as
you
vocal.
Love Trey Burke.
Trey, exactly. Trey Burke.
Trey Trash Burke.
Dang.
I'm not gonna go too far though. My point is Golden.
Cool,
my point is Cleveland. To me, now you knew what you were getting in Golden State, but to me, you had all that rest. You didn't get tested, and now you facing your hardest test, and it hurts. It's like going from public school to an Ivy League school, dude. It's difficult. You know what you're getting yourself into.
Don't issue on public schools.
Bro.
Prince George's County Public Schools.
Oh, yeah. Our trash. They're trash.
Thank you.
They're
we trash. All went there.
Roosevelt's okay.
Yeah, but look, when you got to college, you know, how'd you do in the beginning? So it shows how PG County Schools prepared you for that.
We know what happened. So we know why I messed up in college. Don't even try that. Don't even use schooling for that.
How did Roosevelt prepare you for college?
It wasn't Roosevelt.
Exactly.
Thing.
You'd have been ready.
No, it wasn't Roosevelt thing. And you know it. But anyway.
My point is, my gosh, man. Y'all get what I'm saying.
I understand the point.
Cleveland was not, it's like, they weren't ready. It's like when you watch something on film, like Floyd Mayweather.
But this
you know
is the
what
thing.
You get yourself into.
But
as soon as you get in the ring,
though.
Right? Well, that's
not
the point.
You can't get ready for this monster. That's
no. But this is the thing, though. This is the thing. You had that one game. Okay, I give it to you. Lost by 20 the first game. I give it to you. But the second game, especially when you have 2 days in between the first and the second game, that's when you make adjustments. That's when you make adjustments. It's just that Golden State with Kevin Durant is all the much better. And if
maybe it was a coaching issue.
No, but it's like
it's not a coaching issue. It's
because Tyron Lewis gave a lot of credit for what happened last season. He changed lineups.
No, I'm gonna tell you. Did either one of you listen to the press conference after game one?
Oh, when he gave him credit, when he's talking about how that
Kevin Durant and Tyron
a lot of KD.
No, you talking about
I did.
Yeah.
How did LeBron? He sounded defeated already.
But see, I think that was. I also think that was just.
He said, "Oh, it's KD."
When you talk about
Tyron Lue, both of those guys sound defeated, and they are the leaders of this franchise.
See, I think those at the same time people played on that. I think that was more like Phil Jackson talk, like just trying to gas.
I don't. For the simple fact the Golden State Warriors were difficult for them to beat last season.
Totally agree.
And now you add Kevin Durant into the equation.
Just made an argument for me.
Oh no! I know. I'm like
that. You're right. Just made an argument.
Well, that was one of my 3 points, though. Yeah. Kevin, that's the obvious.
Kevin Durant.
Is the difference makes. But what I'm saying is, I think they were being very candid and saying, you know what, KD adds a different element to this. And we said that last week. We were like, think about it. They struggled to beat a team with Harrison Barnes, who was not playing well in the finals. Now you add in Kevin Durant.
Not only Harrison.
Tristan Thompson
Barnes.
He's freaking a specialty player.
I just think
he don't matter.
Anyone who says that Cleveland is facing the same Golden State team is wrong. Not only is it Kevin Durant, but even though he hasn't played a lot, JaVale McGee, he brings an element.
He's
a factor. Then you have Matt Barnes.
He don't play.
Yeah, he doesn't play, but they still have, you know, this isn't the exact
show. Sean Livingston has been the difference.
Sean Livingston, Ian Clark. They have McClain. They have this bench is deeper. Well, I'm not gonna say deeper, is far more active than it has been than it was last year in the last three games.
Speaking of Harrison Barnes, big ups to Derek Fisher.
Harrison Barnes.
No, Derek Fisher. No,
you talking about Matt Barnes?
Matt Barnes. Big up to Derek Fisher.
Oh, because he flipped his car.
Yeah,
dirty Wally.
Nah, you snitch. I mean, yeah, snitch. He's dirty. I don't know. He's taking. Never mind. That's
okay. All right. That's basketball wise. Man, we talk about that.
But no. To me, it's this simple. You're playing against Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and a guy who scored 70 points. You can't coach that. You can't go against that. Like, that's something that's too hard to coach against.
Like I said, game three, we'll see. We'll see what happens because I still pick the Cavs in 7. I don't think the Cavs are done yet. I think depending on what happens in game three, if they win game three, the Cavaliers are speaking up by single digits, then I feel like it's going to be what we'll say, 4-1.
Give me a game three prediction then, Ray Jesus.
I'll take the Cavaliers in this one. I think they'll win by double digits too.
What you got? Give me Golden State winning this thing by 8 points.
So before I make my prediction as well, so like last year they got blown out in both games too. So this isn't like
worse
than this.
Yeah.
So this isn't change.
Word, but
worse than worse.
Worse than this.
No, I said worse than this.
Oh, my bad. My bad. You're
trying to fire me, man. Look at you. You really trying to get messed up.
Sorry. Go ahead, man. I apologize.
Are, man. Come on, man. Rasheed Wallace. So that doesn't bother you. Doesn't change your mind on the series at all, Will?
No, not at all. This is
Kevin Durant's team.
It is Kevin Durant's team, but LeBron James seemed defeated. I've heard his body language. I've seen his gestures. I've heard his tone. This is the same tone that he's had after he's been defeated against those, when he played for Cleveland against those Boston teams, when he was in Miami and they lost to Dallas. He just sounds defeated.
Well,
I'm not saying he's not going out there and not going to give maximum effort, but I believe in the back of his mind, he knows no matter, even if I go full ramp against this team, we just don't have enough.
Before we close the segment, I'm interested to see how Steph does in game three.
On the road?
Yes.
See what he's going to do?
Because Steph, even in these first two games, I still don't feel like his jump shot is what it has been.
Golden State's a 3.5-point favorite. Game three.
You know what? I think game one, he started off kind of.
He was 1-for-6 from three to start in game two.
I feel like once they make that run, because of Kevin Durant, once Kevin Durant gives them that lead, that's when you see Steph go ham. That's when he starts to really, because it's like a front runner mentality in a way when Steph starts to do his thing up in this series or against Cleveland the last couple of years. But no, I actually for my prediction I picked Golden State in six, but it doesn't look good. I mean, game two to me was an indicator. I feel like you had to be competitive in game two, even if Golden State won, for me to feel good about Cleveland coming into
And see, I told you that last week, though. You got to admit, and you can go back and listen. I said I wouldn't be surprised if Golden State snatches the first two games.
You said that.
Shock me at all. But I still picked Cleveland.
But it's different. For me, it's different. It's real different people. compared to last year. Because when you watch Kevin Durant, everything seems so easy. I think that's it seems so easy to score 30 for him. And last season, yeah, you can double off. Harrison Barnes might have had a good game in the first two games. He may have had one good game, right? But you don't expect Harrison Barnes to give you like 30.
You got a whole team of individuals who have to overcome a 3-1 demon, and that is the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Durant lost to the guys he's playing. Yes, he does, because he lost to this 3-1. Golden State team 3-1. Bam! You can't defend that.
Look,
you lost that one.
No.
That was a definitive loss.
It wasn't.
You got to face me again like Gary Russell.
No, you won't let me talk. You won't let me talk.
You said Kevin Durant is ever 3-1. Yes, he does.
You dirty. No, you just said the other track. No, we're going to break. You're right. I lost this one. We're going to break. When we get back from break, we're going to talk about Bryce Harper.
3-1.
He might be a Chicago Cubs.
3-1.
You listen to Urban Sports Day.
For ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
Transform like this, perform like this. What shouts you a new weapon? I don't contemplate, I meditate. Then off your head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit 'cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon. I serve. Yeah, that's him again. The sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tires skirt the boulevard. I know how you work. I know just who you are. See, use a. Your arm will probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch. Heritage inside your DNA. Background don't exist. Burn on side a jellyfish I gauge. See my pedigree. Most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I've been through probably offend you. This is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldier's DNA. Born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay.
as a riff gonna be this case. The reason my power's here. Salute the truth and the prophecy. I got loyalty, got royalty.
This is why I say that hip hop has done more damage to young African Americans than racism in recent years.
I live a better.
You're listening to Urban Sports Scene, myself, Wally, Will T, Ray Jeezy. Bryce Harper reports from, like, there was a report out there from Peter Gammons that he heard that Bryce Harper wants to play for the Chicago Cubs in 2018.
Well, I mean, look, he'll have served this time. Well, not served. I don't want to say served this time in DC, but he'll have completed his compact, he's fulfilled his obligations with his contract. If the Chicago Cubs offer him a superior deal and that's where his heart is, then let him go there. But in the interim, this team has a great opportunity now to win the World Series. So what we need to be focusing on is, can this team bring a championship to DC in 2017? That's what everyone needs to be focused on. We don't 2018 to take care of itself. Look, he signed next year. Uh-huh. He has a one year contract with the Nationals. Uh-huh. We need to focus on this year. What people need to really pay attention to and pester management about is shoring up the back of that rotation, bringing in two relievers. I think Kota Glover, he has enough.
To what?
To be a setup guy. I don't think at this point he's your closer, but no, you need two more arms in the back of that bullpen, and then I would feel comfortable, even though I know this team has a ridiculous 10.5 game lead in the beginning of June in their division. But we don't need to worry. The Bryce Harper situation will take care of itself. The Lerner family has shown that they have a willingness to spend. They have a willingness to do whatever it takes to make this team better when it comes to signing free agents. Not only free agents outside of the market, but their own free agents to retain the top talent.
No, I think that you got something to say, Ray? Sorry.
I'm just to add to that, the Lerners as of recent have been shown they're willing to spend, and they're showing some loyalty. I'm referring directly to the Strasburg deal last year. But I want to remind you of who Bryce Harper's agent is.
Scott Boras, yes.
And you know Scott Boras is going to get you money. And the Yankees, and right now with Theo Epstein in Chicago,
they got the money.
To me, right, I think Scott Boras is going to have a nice time negotiating Bryce Harper's future contracts.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a multiple franchise.
Yeah, he definitely. I think the Cubs are a great fit if he wanted to, you know, if the story is true, it's a great fit in terms of Joe Maddon. The type of players he gets, Bryce fits it. And I mean, obviously, Bryce will fit any team because how talented he is. Probably right now the best baseball player going this season. But though his style in terms of his hustle or whatnot fits what Joe Maddon wants to do. I mean, how Joe Maddon manages players and what he expects from his players. To be honest with you, if it's next season, if Bryce Harper, you know, if this talk is strong, if everything is true, I'd trade him. I don't think you lose a player like that. Not this season. I think this season you go for it. But next season, say you don't get it. Next season, I would entertain trading for him. And the reason why I would trade him, I think about trading him, is because you see, you get a small sample size, even within the suspension and whatnot, that this team's still a power team offensively. You know, with Rendon, Zimmerman. I know people are going to say you can't bank on Zimmerman, but we know Zimmerman from years before when he was healthy that he was a 280, 300 hitter who can drive in 100 runs anyway, 100 RBIs anyway. And then you add him with Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy's been a 300 hitter plus regardless. And then you have a pitching staff. And I think we forget that, you know, in any era of baseball, if you can throw out 4 to 5 guys who can win you 10-plus games, which this Nationals team can, you're going to compete. Like, you're going to compete.
Well, you bring up an interesting proposition, right? Okay, let's say from all indications, Scott Boras and the Lerners, they have a great relationship.
Yeah.
Let's say that the Lerners start to get a sense that they don't have what it takes, or Scott or Bryce Harper isn't interested in returning to DC.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you have a generational great player.
Yeah.
What type of compensation would you ask for a guy who's a generational great player? So are you going to ask a team, and would a team be willing to give that up?
Yeah, I mean, he's so great, of course. They'll give you the prospects. He's so
even if that team that's acquired him knows there's a chance that he won't re-sign with
you them. Have to trade him to a team that you know is capable of keeping him. Like it would be for me, it would be the Cubs, because the Cubs, again, if the Cubs have a great minor league system, if I'm the Nats and he wants to go to Chicago, I'm talking to the Cubs, because again, the Cubs will go against the Yankees in terms of the bidding war for Bryce Harper. You can trade him, to the Cubs, and he can get his money. So that now the Cubs don't worry about the Yankees. They're not worried about the Yankees. They're not even worried about, say, a team like the Detroit Tigers, who tend to spend a lot of money on players at times when they have to. So if I'm the Nationals and I think that Bryce isn't going to re-sign with me, like I have that feeling, I would call up Chicago and say, you know what, you're going to have Bryce, give me your prospects. Because people forget, like, as great as Bryce is, we've seen it before. Like, Ken Griffey Jr. to me was the best thing in baseball when I was younger. Like, he was like the best thing in baseball. He decided to go to the Reds, and the Seattle Mariners still were a postseason team, one of the best. They had the best record in the AL.
Yeah,
they picked up Ichiro, but that's not, at that time to me, Ichiro wasn't Ken. He wasn't Ken Griffey Jr. You know what I mean? So when I look at the Nationals team, this team has the pitching staff. They have the offense to still compete and win the World Series without a Bryce. Bryce makes it easier, though. Don't get it twisted. Bryce makes it easier, but you can lose Bryce and still be an effective team.
Touche.
All right, touche.
Yeah, touche. No, I'm just going
to expect an argument. He won his game today.
I never used to, I'm not used to getting that touche. I'm used to, like, people saying, you're wrong, Wally.
No, there's a level of truth to it, but I always think that when it comes to Scott Boras, he always is able to find that mystery team that no one thought would be a favorite. Like right now, we're saying the Chicago Cubs, we're saying the Yankees, and possibly the Dodgers.
Good point.
Right? Uh-huh. But he always has an ace up his sleeve, and he's always able to bring another team into the equation that no one thought would be able to do it. Maybe it's the Detroit Lions. Detroit Tigers. Maybe it's, who knows? Maybe it's the Mets, or maybe it's the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, you never know. Never know. Anyway, the Washington Wizards are trying out former Kansas point guard Frank Mason. Is that a good fit? We'll discuss that after the break.
Frank Mason III.
The third?
Yes.
The third. Frank Mason III. Is that a good fit? We'll talk about it after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Happy holidays from the Washington Bullets. Go Bullets! Go Bullets!
Down, down, shake, shake, shoot, shoot, break, break.
Alright, listen to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wally, Will T, Ray Jeezy. Before the break, I mentioned Frank Mason III. The Wizards have tried him out for a pre-draft day workout.
Naismith Player of the Year, yeah. Frank Mason III.
Dang, you got all the accolades for this dude.
No, I followed that Kansas team pretty closely during the season. It was one of the – they were – during the season anyway, they were one of the top three or four teams in the nation. Anyone who watched that team knows that Frank Mason III was the heart and soul of that team. I know that they had Josh Jackson, who's a potential top three, top four pick in the NBA draft. But Frank Mason III was the guy who really was the heart and soul. He made that team run. Now, the question is – will his game transfer to the NBA? That's the first question. And two, does this team think that they need to upgrade the backup point guard position? Because even though he didn't play at the level you had hoped to, Brandon Jennings is a guy that can play in the league. He's shown glimpses. He's shown, I'm not going to even say glimpses, his first two.
He was a star.
2 or 3 years. Yeah, he was a star. Yeah, he was the former rookie of the year. Then he went to Detroit. Didn't work out in Detroit. So he's a guy who's shown that he can play in this league. It's just all about consistency. And is he willing to take that backup point guard position? We know that he's still a young guy. Maybe he thinks I could be a starter in this league and I won't get the opportunity to truly shine in D.C.
I think if you get the opportunity to take Frank Mason, you take him. And here's why. He's a senior, which you rarely see these days, getting a solid four-year player in the draft who can contribute right away, averaging 20 points a game last year, 5 assists, considering, like you said, the team that they had. I think that's impressive. And I like his size. I don't like his height, but I like his size, though. Like, Trey Burke and Frank Mason are probably around the same height. Frank Mason is listed at 5'11". Wally, typically, the listings are generous, as we've seen. So Frank Mason might be 5'9". Trey Burke and I look like we're about the same height.
Yeah,
so he may be about 5'9", 5'8". But I think he's solid, which I think you need in the NBA, as you've seen with the young guys. When they come in, if you're not bulking up, you get thrown around early on in your career. Dwight Howard can speak to that. LeBron James, guys like that, you can see their body change as they got older. But Frank Mason, to me, has an NBA-ready body, even though he's on the shorter side. Uh-huh. And again, he has the experience. I don't think he'll be rattled in big games. I don't think he'll have a hard time adjusting to the speed of the game based on everything that he's seen. So I think if he's there, you take him. I think he should be around. But we're talking about Ernie Grunfeld, which I know Will could probably chime in on. I doubt that he'll make that move. My guess is he'll get somebody, an international player, to back up, to be a backup point guard. But Frank Mason played in a pro style offense and system under, what is his name?
Bill Self,
who I love personally. I think he's an excellent coach, and I think he also is one that designs plays better than many coaches in basketball, even maybe better than Coach K.
Well, you mentioned the guy who would be responsible for making a pick, Ernie Grunfeld. since you mentioned it, I'm just going to talk about it. I don't know where – I haven't seen any mock drafts, so I don't know if Frank Mason III is projected to go in the first round. I only say that because the Wizards do not have a first-round pick.
No, he's
because
not.
They gave up. Okay. And I know that they have – I think it's, number 50-something, 52, 53 in the second round. Maybe Frank Mason III isn't around, but in either way you put it, with that second round pick, you still need to find you need to hit gold. You need to find a guy that can come in and contribute to this bench next year. Frank Mason III is a guy who, for all intents and purposes, we've seen that what he's done over a 4-year career, and maybe he is a guy that can contribute to this bench.
I think he can because from what I saw in college, he had an alpha dog mentality. You talked about Josh Jackson, a guy who was ultra talented, but on that court, I think to me Frank Mason III showed out even more, and he took a lot of big shots and wasn't scared of the moment. Even if he was going against one of the better point guards in the game in terms of young point guards, one and done dudes, Frank Mason III came out and played. He wasn't scared about anybody. I think that's what the Wizards need off their bench. They need somebody who's not intimidated at the moment. A guy that's, you know what, when he's on the court, he's going to feel like he's the best player on the court. And to me, Frank Mason doesn't shy from that. He's not shy from a challenge. I think he'll be a great pick. Obviously, yeah, you mentioned, Brandon Jennings, but Brandon Jennings has forgotten who he was, back in the day when he was drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. He forgot that he was a guy that was fearless. Now, for some strange reason, he's timid, and you see it on the court. Well, Frank Mason, if you watch him in college, and I'm not going to say it's hard for me to say that he's going to have that same mentality here in the NBA, but I can only go for what I've seen in college. In college, he just wasn't scared. Because I thought there were other point guards that were tight, that were better than him, that he would go against, and he would be the guy with the better stat line because he was the more aggressive point guard in the matchup. He's not a timid player. The Wizards need that off their bench. They need guys on their bench who think they're better. They're starters that play like they're starters. To me, Frank Mason III plays like a starter because he's not scared of the moment.
Yeah, that's what the Wizards needs, and hopefully that's what they'll be able to get if it's Frank Mason III or if it's someone else with their second round pick, opposed to having a first and a second.
On Facebook, I asked the question, is he a good fit for the Wizards? Stanley said, yeah, major upgrade over Jennings. A lot of people down with Jennings. I remember Jennings.
I know Jennings isn't, he doesn't take the best shot. He's not, and I know everyone is really, with ESPN stats, everyone is really focused on efficiency. You know, turn not shot efficiency, you know, taking the best shot, which is a three efficiency for the three pointer, and also not turning the ball over. But I still believe that Brandon Jennings is a guy who can play in this league. It's just, it all comes down to confidence and finding the right fit.
And Noor on Facebook said, no rookie will play significant minutes under Scott Brooks. I don't know.
Scott Brooks is known as a guy that develops young talent.
He does have his moments. He doesn't play certain people. I don't know on this team. I think if you have Frank Mason, you have to play him. I don't think that he's has that luxury to say I can't play a Frank Mason.
Very true. Yeah. And if I remember correctly, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, James Harden were rookies, and they had significant minutes under Scott Brooks.
There were other guys like James. Well, James Harden should have had more minutes, but he played though. But he should have more minutes. Even he had like Jeremy Lamb on the trade, he barely played.
That's true.
And so he does have moments where he played him at first and then stopped playing him. And it wasn't like he wasn't effective. Even Perry Jones III, play him, stop, that's it. Now I'm okay.
Yeah, I think in another 2 or 3 years when we look back on those OKC, the roster of those OKC teams, we're going to look back and say, why the hell didn't this team compete for multiple championships?
He plays Steven Adams. I guess he's selective.
He's selective. No, he's selective. He'll play certain people. He's selective. But anyway, it's time to wrap this show up. Anything you want to say?
No parting shots.
No parting
shots. I'm good.
You good? You straight, Kaz?
Awesome.
My interview with Gary Russell Jr. saved the show. Big pat on the back for me.
Yeah, you should. Good job, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I carried you guys today.
Yes, you did, sir.
Let's do better next week.
Let's do better, man.
Really? Wally?
Yeah, let's do better, man.
All right, man. All right, thank you.
I respect that, man. Hey, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega Leaders out, big homie. Yeah.